Chapter 1. Willa. 9 years later. "There's one," I whispered, pointing toward the shooting star that streaked across the midnight sky. Even though I was alone, pointing them out had become a habit. My dad had been my stargazing partner for as long as I could remember. As a kid, he'd taught me about the constellations and galaxies. We'd have contests to see who could spot the most shooting stars. These days, he preferred to sleep at night, unless there was a special stellar occasion like a comet or a lunar eclipse. So my nights counting falling stars were done alone. I'd come out to the playground behind my house, sit in the same swing with my eyes to the sky, then report to Dad the next morning how many I'd counted. Sending some wood chips flying, I kicked off the ground and got my swing moving. My hands gripped the chains as I pumped my legs for some speed. When I had my momentum built, I let my head fall back. The tips of my long blonde hair nearly touched the ground as I smiled at the Milky Way. Today had been a good day. No, an incredible day. Months ago, I'd petitioned a charitable foundation in New York to buy the Flathead Summer Camp, the children's camp where I worked as the director. It was owned by a local church, but after years of barely covering the overhead and maintenance costs, they decided it was time to let it go. The church had wanted to sell it to someone who'd continue it as a camp, but with no buyers, the camp would have to be closed down permanently and the land sold off for private development. But kids needed that camp. They needed a place to escape for a week every summer without toys or iPads or video games. So I'd written a proposal and sent it to various charitable organizations around the country, then wished on 100 shooting stars for a miracle. I still couldn't believe my wish had come true. Earlier today, the Kendrick Foundation from New York City had agreed to buy my camp, and as a bonus, they were keeping me on as director. Tonight, I wasn't wishing on falling stars. I was simply grateful. My swing slowed to a stop. I pulled myself upright and took in the quiet night. Behind me was Lark Cove School. Its cream cinder block walls glowed with reflected moonlight. The school and the long playground took up the whole block, except for 5 houses, 3 straight ahead and 2 to the left, one of which was mine. My parents had never needed to build an outdoor play area. Instead, growing up, I'd just cross the invisible boundary that separated our lawn from the playgrounds and use the same swing set and jungle gym that I played on during recess. All of the houses were dark tonight, the only light coming from across the street where a few porch lights were on. I was admiring a hanging basket of flowers when a dark figure strode onto the sidewalk. I gasped, nearly falling off my swing as he stepped off the cement and onto the grass. My fingers slipped into the right pocket of my navy sundress, palming the small canister of pepper spray Dad had bought me for nights when I came out here alone. He'd also given me the whistle I was wearing around my neck. I contemplated jumping off my swing and hurrying home, but stopped short. I knew that stride. No, that swagger. It belonged to the man who'd made my heart race and cheeks flush since I was 17. Jackson. Was he coming over here? I looked over my shoulder, expecting someone behind me, but there wasn't. Forgetting the pepper spray, I used both hands to smooth down my hair. It had a natural wave that looked great for the first 8 hours of the day, but somewhere between hours 9 and 10, it grew exponentially in volume and frizz. With it sort of tamed, I swallowed the nerves in my throat just as Jackson stepped off the grass and into the wood chips surrounding the swings.
"Hey, Willa."
Oh, my goodness. He'd called me by the right name. Finally, after years of correcting him, each time he called me Willow, hearing my name in his deep voice gave me wings. Heat broke across my cheeks, and I managed a breathy, "Hi."
"Is this swing taken?"
I shook my head. He grinned, then somehow fit his large frame into the small black rubber seat. His broad shoulders extended past the chains by at least 5.